No, I'm not for sale.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue Colts Cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining us here again tonight. We just finished watching the Colts beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 19-15. Pretty good game overall by the Colts, especially in the first half. You know, I think probably save for the first drive or two, especially on defense. But overall, the Colts looked pretty solid, I think. Throughout, even the depth guys looked pretty decent. I mean, Landry Jones kind of had a heyday with the Colts for the most part. He went 21 of 31 for 163, a touch and a pick. Otherwise, I think the Colts looked pretty good. And here to join me tonight to talk about this one is Chris Blystone from Stampede Blue. Chris, what's up, man?
Not a whole lot. Thanks for having me, Matt.
Absolutely. Good to talk to you. Good to get to go this or get to go through this real quick. So what stood out to you tonight? Was there one thing in particular? Was there a certain drive or anything like that? Or was there a certain player that really, you know, kind of hung out in the balance to you?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just, the intensity level. This was the first time you really saw this group look like what we thought, maybe going into the off season that they could look like. Mm-hmm. You saw some of those new, defensive players making an impact. John Simon, it's hard to go without saying that guy's name. He just keeps coming up.
Yeah.
And you know, anytime you can get a guy who consistently creates turnovers, that is a huge deal. And, you know, Mike Adams, back when he got brought on, he was kind of that guy. And there were some games that we probably won that we didn't deserve to be in, but Mike Adams made a play or something like that. And I think we're seeing that same sort of thing happen here with John Simon, and I hope that translates to the regular season. But I think you got to be encouraged that he continues to make those kind of plays.
Yeah, I mean, you know, early on that first drive, I mean, we saw Pitt having some lanes to run on offense. I mean, it looked like it was going to be another, you know, rough go at it because Pittsburgh was running down the field on us. John Simon comes to, you know, the rescue with a strip sack. And, you like you said, you just can't go without saying that guy's name because – he is making plays. And he was a guy that, you know, Sheard was supposed to be the rush guy, right?
Yeah.
It appears that, to me anyways, that Sheard appears to be more of a power rush guy as opposed to having some secondary moves to get past those offensive tackles, whereas Simon, on the other hand, looks like he's a little more fluid in the pass rush, to me, as far as getting moves to get past those guys to get into the backfield a little bit. You know, it was nice. It was a quality move. He got there, got the ball on the ground. Colts take over, you know, right when the Steelers are about ready to probably put it in the end zone because they were moving pretty well at the time. So Simon's come up big. I wasn't sure that he would be an impact player, so to speak, for the Colts this year. I just kind of thought he would be, you know, the set the edge guy, the occasional sack, probably some, you know, and good against the run, you know, a quality a guy who could drop into coverage there from that position at the outside linebacker role. And, you know, now he's making plays in the preseason already. I don't know if that's necessarily going to lead to him being some sort of a game changer during the regular season, but it's going to be fun to think about. I mean, at least for now, you know, we get in there, we at least know that he's capable of doing it. He's got the right idea to go after the ball, especially when he's got the time to do it. He didn't try to go in and try to flatten Big Ben. He's a big dude, you know, notoriously hard to get down. He went after the ball, and that's smart, yeah, especially when he had the time to do it. You know, Colts get the ball back. Then Tolzien, who actually looked pretty good tonight. I was pretty impressed with Tolzien. I've not been a fan of his by any stretch of the imagination, but went 7 of 10 for 123. Did throw an awful pick, but outside of that, he was pretty efficient. He ended up getting the ball. He was putting the ball on time, on target, and looked pretty good. He kept the offense moving a little bit. Moncrief helped him out a lot on their first drive there with the big yard after the catch run. A couple broken tackles from Moncrief and got the Colts in scoring position. You know, that was nice to see. That wasn't necessarily via the pass that made that play happen. It was all Moncrief after a couple broken tackles, but you know, a couple of plays later, they get down towards the end zone. Moncrief runs a great in-and-out route, gets himself open. There was a pass interference on him But the pass from Tolzien, now this could, and I may be reading too much, and it was an awful pass, but I don't know if Tolzien recognized that there was a hold there and he wanted to let go of the ball so that the play could be called, or if it was just a bad pass. And Gore ended up scoring touchdown, you know, from the 1 yard line after that. But did you gain anything other than that from the Colts' first drive tonight?
Well, you know, it was just nice to see Tolzien even willing to pull the trigger on some of those throws because, I mean,
yeah,
I just expected
even that deep ball to Dorsett too.
Yeah, I mean, I just expected him to dump it off 3 or 4 yards to Jack Doyle three times and punt. And
right.
That's what we've seen so far this season out of him. And so it was nice to see him have the guts to make some of those passes. And he did pretty well with them. And, you know, I think it's always good to see Dante Moncrief back on the field. So, you know, having him on the field and breaking a tackle too, because that's an area he ought to be doing better at anyway. Mm-hmm. As the resident big guy, if he wants to really take that step, he's going to have to start, you know, making more out of those catches than you know, just he can't be like Hilton and Dorsett where it's okay to go down and save yourself for the next drive. He needs to be, you know, pushing for more yards because he's the big physical guy. So,
yeah. And they need a guy like that outside. You know, it can't be the tight ends that are always fighting for more yardage. We've got to have big guys as a receiver being able to do that as well. A little bit further down in the game, we saw the defense struggling with getting tackles. You know, a lot of poor tackles. It seemed like we had a lot of guys in pursuit, you know, but it just didn't seem like anybody was really either close enough or making a real, you know, solid attempt at getting the tackle. There was minimal pressure after that Simon play, I mean, at least for a while. But one of the things that I pulled out was Nate Hairston looked really solid tonight. I was really impressed with him, his tackling for the most part, other than, you know, one play where he was looking at the ground when he went to make a tackle and it looked pretty sloppy. But other than that, really nice pop. Doing well in coverage. His feet looked really good in coverage as well as when he would go to make a tackle. For the most part, he didn't get off balance too often. Not too many people were shaking him. You know, he was getting himself in the play. It was nice. I also noticed that Henry Anderson was lined up in at three tech a few times as well. I thought that those were pretty interesting for sure.
Yeah. You know, going back to Hairston a little bit, it's always nice to see a cornerback who is willing to play tough against the run. And he definitely, I feel like that's where I saw him the most, was coming up in run support and really holding that edge.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to him, Matthias Farley had a heck of a game for the, you know, especially in the first quarter.
Yeah.
He was just, I mean, I feel like there were like four plays in a row where it was all Matthias Farley. I mean, he basically was just all over it for at least one drive of Pittsburgh's.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because I tweeted out something about, you know, there was a play on the sidelines. And I think it might even have been Jesse James along the sidelines. He batted a ball down, but he used his inside or his outside hand to knock the ball down. And it looked like to me that if Farley would have gone at that with the correct technique, he should have had a pick. Well, I tweeted that, you know, even if there was a quality cover safety on that play, then that would have been a pick, and Ben knew it. You know, the very next play, Farley just starts tearing people up, and I'm like, man, I could not have tweeted that out before he started picking up his game. Really drilled Jesse James on that near catch where he was still going for the ball. Morrison was in quality coverage. Morrison was trying to pry the ball loose, but Farley came in and lit him up, and that was basically what he did on the last John Simon fumble that he forced. You know, Simon starts getting the ball moving. Farley comes in and lays a guy out. The ball comes loose. Fonte recovers. You know, so, I mean, Farley's definitely got his role on this team, I think. I mean, I don't know that it's in coverage, but it certainly is going to be in, you know, as a strong safety and being able to come up against the run and to be able to help with some of those big hits. And they were clean hits, too. So that was nice to see, for sure. Yeah, he had... you're right. He had 3 to 4 plays right there in a row where it looked like he was a part of everything. And that was nice to see. You know, we get back on offense. Tolzien looked pretty good again. Gore was getting some nice holes. He hit a few of them pretty hard. Good. You know what? That's the one thing I love about Gore is his vision. And I've talked in the past, and others have as well, about the line yards that the offensive line created once Gore would be getting to the line of scrimmage. But he really does a lot of shaking of people in the backfield too. He doesn't get hit a lot back there, but he definitely changes his mode of operation when he has to dodge somebody in the backfield. And his vision is so nice. The offensive line was slanting right, and he saw some of the defenders closing in and countering down. And he initially used, I think it was Dorsett that ended up cracking back a little bit, and he went outside of Dorsett and got another 6 or 7 yards or something like that. And that's just who Gore is, just really good vision. It was nice to see him get some nice yards today and running like, you know, a 26-year-old, not a 30-plus-year-old. So that was nice from my end. What'd you think?
I agree. I joked, actually, that, you know, I think he maybe has seen some of the write-ups on Marlon Mack and took personal offense to it because he just didn't look, I mean, he did not look like, you know, the same Frank Gore that you sometimes have seen. And his speed has never been his game. Like you said, his excellent vision. It's so refreshing to watch him run after watching Trent Richardson, because you just watch this guy who's, it's just like he's on another level and can see the field in a way that we just can't. And he takes the right path. He makes himself skinny and gets through some of those holes where you just think there's nothing there. And he comes out the other side of it and he's running linebackers over and falling forward for more yards. So it's always encouraging to see him look good. And I hope he has a great season again. Because, you know, it definitely doesn't hurt to have, you know, a 1-2 punch or a 1-2-3 punch in the running backs and be able to have an effective game. You could see the difference in the momentum that it makes when he runs well, when the Colts run well. And, I love to see Frank run. I'm a big fan of his anyway. I think his work ethic alone, you know, speaks for itself. Anybody you hear talk about him or him talk about, you know, the team first and the way he's, I love watching him slam the ball into the ground when he doesn't get as far as he wants to get. He could go 55 yards. And if it was, you know, 60 to a touchdown, he's ticked and he's getting back up, you know, upset. And so, you know, those kind of things are always encouraging. It's good to see him get out and look fast, especially that one where he really just burst right through and kind of right up the middle. And he looked good. That was definitely encouraging to see.
Going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more with myself and Chris Blystone here right after this. All right, we are back. I am Matt Dainley. We are here with Chris Blystone. Let's talk about another guy, Marcus Hunt. That dude just continues to make plays as well. I mean, getting his hand up on balls, batting balls down. He and Al Woods have been pretty efficient at that this year. He got himself in the backfield, stopped a run, took a couple yards into the backfield. Marlon Mack was getting a lot of work on third down opportunities tonight, you know, so that was kind of interesting to watch, and he got plenty of carries. But, you know, we got to see a little bit more of a realistic role for him. You know, he had 7 carries, only 18 yards, nothing, you know, fantastic. In fact, 12 of those yards came on one run. But outside of that, it really seemed like what we were seeing was, you know, him having to understand inside or outside, follow blockers. You know, the one thing is as trivial as it is about him cutting back and slipping on the one where he went for no gain. And to me, it showed everything opposite of what all the draft nicks were saying about him as far as his inability to break inside. And people thought that he was a guy who wanted to bounce outside on every play. But his willingness to cut back in when there was a hole outside and inside, his willingness to cut back in showed me that he understands the dimensions of the field, that he wanted to get himself as far as he could in the middle of the field and then be able to break out if he had to. I mean, that's smart running. That's a smart kid as a rookie to be able to diagnose that quickly. I mean, he slipped and he got nothing out of it, but the wheels in his head were moving really quickly, and he made the right decision to me. I mean, it made more sense to me. You never want to limit yourself to 6 yards when you can get 26 possibly if you break one tackle. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. A lot of times you want to get those 6 yards if you desperately need them. But he had, and it was on a first down, I believe, or I think, yeah, I actually think it was a first down play, and he took the route that was going to allow him to make a play after getting through the line of scrimmage. And I thought that was really intelligent versus a lot of what we heard previous to him actually getting into, you know, OTAs and offseason and stuff like that, whereas people thought he was strictly an outside runner and that the Colts might have to run, you know, a lot of outside zone type plays to in order to get him some significant yardage.
Well, and I was encouraged. I'm going to have to go back and watch the tape to really solidify this, but I feel like every time I've watched him, he's looked pretty solid in pass protection. I haven't felt like he was a liability. I feel like he hit his assignments. I didn't notice anything, you know, overwhelming. It's not like he's, you know, some prodigy at that, but I feel like he's done what's required of him in pass protection. And he, you know, he had a 17-yard reception that was, I don't know how long the pass was, but he definitely got probably 8 to 10 yards out of it and and made that work. So if you have a guy like that that you can rely on to pass protect and who can be that kind of a threat in space, that's really going to let him carve out himself. If he's able to do both of those things well, to receive and make, you know, make something happen off of a short pass, and then if he's able to not be a liability in protection, he's going to definitely have himself a really good role as a third down back.
I agree. I think it's going to be exciting to watch this year. I don't think, and he may not be a heavy hitter, you know what I mean, or anything like that. I think that a lot of the hope that we got after watching him last week was something that we all knew that we had to kind of holster a little bit, but it was really exciting because you see his upside, and that's what's so fun about those kind of games. But you also, like, as simple as a game tonight where he doesn't have any of those big, big yardage runs, you still see his brains, and I really like that. That's something to look forward to for the future for sure. Another guy, Philip Dorsett, he had a really good night. I mean, Dorsett had some nice catches. He did well when he had the ball in his hands. 3 catches for 60 yards actually led the Colts in receiving yards, only on 4 targets. So, I mean, he wasn't dropping the ball, you know, or anything like that. There's no excuses for anybody to say that, you know, well, he, you know, had, let's say he had 7 targets or something, only caught 3 of them. There was none of that. He had a really nice game. He caught the ball. He ran the ball well. He made some nice catches. The one thing I want from Philip Dorsett is kind of the same thing I want from TJ Green in the opposite role. I want Philip Dorsett to not show his hands so quickly when the ball's in the air. And you know what I'm saying? He's tracking the ball, and you can see his hands come out when that ball's 10 yards from hitting his hands. And then vice versa, you see a guy like TJ Green, and he can't find the ball very often when he's in coverage on those guys in those similar situations. And I mean, I feel like it doesn't take a great receiver to be able to catch that ball on a guy like TJ Green, and vice versa. Philip Dorsett's going to get that ball knocked down by some of the more quality corners that he goes up against if he keeps tipping his hands so quickly to where the ball's coming down. You know, you want to bring your hands out as late as possible, but still plenty early to make the catch, not so far in advance. But that's just a technical thing. It's not, you know, I mean, I'm not critiquing him too much. I think that he had a really good game. I was happy for him. You know, with all the trade winds blowing and stuff like that, as far as Dorsett, you know, he either made a case for himself to stay in Indy, or he made a case for the Colts to find, you know, maybe a couple more legitimate trade partners. We don't really know, but I was proud of him one way or the other for a really good game tonight. I thought he did a nice job hauling the ball in, and he, you know, he looked like a legitimate threat tonight.
Absolutely. And as long as Chester Rogers continues to be injured, and, you know, he's had a hamstring problem that seems to be carrying on, that job is up for grabs. And it was excellent timing for him to have a big game, because not only does he do it against a team we're going to see later in the season, you know, but he does it in a time where he kind of has had enough time off that there have to be some questions about, you know, do you keep this guy around? You know, obviously we know what our readers and listeners think about Dorsett, and we know they're ready to ship him off to anybody who will have him. But right, really, he's a pretty good player, and he showed it, you know, today. He's got things to improve on. One of the things I've always thought about him is, you know, he hasn't had a healthy Andrew Luck really ever to throw to him. He hasn't had the same offensive coordinator for, you know, all the time that he's been with the Colts. He's changed offensive coordinators. It may be a little bit of a struggle for him to do more. And you know, we put so much pressure on these young guys, and he's a first round pick. And I think once that pick is made, you almost have to throw that away and not think about it anymore, because the expectation is always that they're going to be excellent. But we can be upset about where he was picked. At this point, that shouldn't really hold any weight. Is he a valuable, productive part of the team? Yes or no? And beyond that, the first round pick is spent. We can't get it back. So is he a contributor on the team, or is he not? And if he is, I'm glad for him. I mean, that makes us better. If we think that if he has a good game and shows himself off, that benefits us too. If Chester Rogers is going to be back and they think they can do without Dorsett, then they can get more for him in a trade maybe, and whatever it is. So I'm glad for him, because I think that with the Colts or with someone else, he's going to do reasonably well for himself if he can stay healthy and keep progressing. But
yeah, me too. And I think one of the things that the Colts really want from him is to fight through some of these nagging BS injuries, to be honest with you. I think they want to see more fight in him from that angle. And if he does that, I think that they're going to respect him more. And I really think that that's kind of where the line's been drawn, to be honest with you. It seemed like not only and I'd not heard anybody with the Colts say this or anything like that. I'm not trying to allude to that. But I just think that it was felt, along with a lot of the media down there at training camp this, in the past few weeks, that was one of the things that a lot of people thought, that, look, dude, you're in no position to be sitting out for these piggly wiggly little issues, man. You are already in jeopardy of kicking down the depth chart about fifth or sixth on the list. You've got to get in there and make a name for yourself. Then he started kind of slow, sat out a few more days and looked like, he could be gone. And I think that's when the bulk of the trade talk probably started, kind of under the sheets a little bit. And I think that if he shows that, look, every time he jams a thumb or a finger, that he's not going to sit out for a week, or three practices out of the week or anything like that. Get in there, take your lumps, man. And even if you're not as effective, you're showing that you can fight through injuries, which is what a lot of these guys are doing. And when I say injuries, I don't mean the stuff where, a sprain, a high ankle sprain or something like that. That stuff you can't really mess with, or you're going to end up ruining the rest of the season, or at least a large chunk of it. I just think they want him to fight through the minor stuff, and be a big boy, type of thing. So, but other than that, like we both talked about, I thought he had a really good game tonight. Like I said, three catches for 60 yards and had a nice big one for 32. That was a nice catch along the boundary right there. I was proud of him. Stephen Morris, we've talked about this quarterback situation for a while now. I think it's pretty obvious that Philip Walker is not an NFL quarterback. At least I hope it is now with the coaching staff as well. But Stephen Morris, even though he wasn't as, up-paced and dynamic, no bullets to the front corner of the end zone for a touchdown tonight or anything like that, but very efficient, very accurate. Again, 12 of 16, 143 yards, had that beautiful throw to Bug Howard, had a nice throw, actually. There was a couple throws. The one to Daryl Daniels across the middle, Daryl Daniels dropped that. I watched that on replay about four times just to make sure that wasn't like Daryl stopped in the middle of a route, or that Morris led him too much and it was actually a curl, or something like that. And then the pass to the end zone to Jack Doyle, I thought maybe he underthrew it a little bit, or that the defender got a hand on it, but it didn't look like it to me. It was pretty on target. It just looked like their timing may have been off just a touch, because Doyle doesn't miss that stuff, and it was close enough to him to where he should have caught it. So all in all, the guy was extremely accurate all night. Again, in the face of pressure, got drilled a couple times. I was pretty impressed with that. Made a couple big throws, actually, while getting hit. So, I mean, if there's any question about this guy's toughness, game plan, ability to play between the 20s, ability to play outside of a two-minute drill, I think he answered all those questions tonight.
I definitely agree. And, the thing I think you have to look at in this game, because both Tolzien and Morris played well, I don't think anybody would argue that. But if you just look at the two guys side to side, and you say, what do they bring to the table? I think Morris just offers more upside. You know what you have in Tolzien. He's reliable, although he hasn't been anything really to speak highly of over the first 2 weeks of the season. But he's
just not going to challenge secondaries as far as, you know, at any sort of a rate. You know that when Steven Morris is in there, you know that he can, I mean, he's got a nice gun, man. He can, he's going to throw it deep, you know, and if he wants to, he can. And I think that's something that would help the offense in general. It would keep them honest.
Well, and I'm trying to remember who it was he was throwing the ball to. He got hit. I mean, he got folded in half. He got just nailed on a hit, and he just stood in the pocket, knew the hit was coming, and he let it rip. And I can't, it was on the left side boundary, and I can't remember who he was throwing to, but it was a beautiful pass, and you knew the whole time, telegraphed, he was getting nailed.
That was to Dorsett. That was for that first third down conversion that he had.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a beautiful pass, and you could see from anywhere on the field he's going to get crushed. And he just stood in there, let it go. It was the kind of thing you would have seen Andrew do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of thing just makes me look at it and go, I don't really see what the holdup is here. What is stopping you from letting this guy go? You know, because he has that kind of poise that you just don't often see in a backup quarterback.
Yeah, and, you know, credit to Dorsett. He went up and got that ball in front of, or, you know, right around a couple, three defenders. And that was a nice catch on his part, too. That's something that he hasn't done in the past that I've seen. You know, a couple times I even rewatched, I ended up getting a decent camera angle on a ball to the right side that Morris threw, and I can't remember who he threw this one to for some reason. I want to say that it was to Aiken, but our Dorsett, it may have actually been to Dorsett, but I'm not sure. It was off to the right side, though. He got him on an out or a comeback to the right side boundary, and you saw Morris looking at the safety. Although I don't think he needed to, but it was nice to see him do it, I guess, that's kind of what I'm getting at. It was nice to see him be able to move his eyes around and try to manipulate defenders a little bit. I was happy to be able to see him do that, then get to his receiver and throw the ball on time and on target. It was pretty nice. I was impressed with it. You know, overall, I thought that he had a really sharp game. And again, you know, I'm kind of just checking through like 3 and 4 word notes here that I kept during the game. Hairston is in like a ton of these, and I just can't get over how physical he was and how well he did in coverage through the majority of it. You know, Rashawn Melvin had a pretty decent night in coverage. He was leveraging the receivers a little bit towards the boundary, which I thought was impressive, something he struggled to do because he hasn't been. He is close enough to make a play, but he doesn't ever seem to be in position enough to leverage them towards the boundary. I was happy to watch that. It was something that I wanted to make sure that I wrote down because I noticed it a couple times. And I was proud of that, that some of these guys are learning, you know, maybe more technical parts of their game that have only been with the team for a year now or in their first year with the squad.
Yeah. You know, the guy that really, until he came out with an injury, was just, you know, exactly like you always expect him to be, was Vontae Davis. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of setting that tone as he was just tackling everybody. I mean, he was in, it seemed like, on everything. That's the Vontae that we, you know, that we know, that we love. And, you know, until he went out with an injury, it really seemed like he was kind of that tone setter for, you know, for the style of tackling, the style of play. Everything was, you know, was looking better from the tackling respect anyway. Mm-hmm. And then when he went out, that was where I really noticed a change, and it was probably because of TJ Green coming in and taking his spot. Green just, you know, he just looked rough in tackling, and then it just sort of seemed like a cascade of poor tackling. But, I mean, I watched him do like the no-armed, I don't know, it's like a torpedo or what he thought he was doing, but... I mean, he bounced off several guys with his arms to his sides. I've done that jump into the pool before, but I've never tried to tackle somebody that way. and you know, he just, 3 or 4 times in a row where you just thought, hey, look, there's TJ Green missing a tackle. He would have made a great play if he would have put his arms up and wrapped that guy up. Yeah. And then you got a guy going for 6 more yards after they encounter TJ Green. And he wasn't the only one, but he was the one that was most noticeable to me right off the bat that just – you know, you got to fix that tackling problem with the 2s and 3s for sure, because we know that we're going to have injuries and those guys are going to play. And man, it really sucked when some of those guys came in and started just, I mean, we have enough struggles without not, you know, using good technique to tackle guys. So,
right. And you kind of reminded me And like you said, that the way he tackles, it just reminds me of the guy who acts like a dolphin that jumps into the pool like that, you know, and squeals, you know, that's just kind of exactly what it looks like. Is he runs, gets in good spot, and then he just dives with his head back in the other direction. And that just doesn't work. No. You know, I mean, you might trip a couple guys up like that, but A, you're going to get a knee in the kidney 99% of the time, or a knee to the forehead and knock yourself out, which I think that he actually probably did get a concussion tonight. Or at least it looked like one of the plays where he hit heads or helmets with Antonio Morrison. It looked like when he went down and they took him off the field, to me, it was a helmet-to-helmet hit, and I thought probably that they were going to end up keeping him out with a concussion, but they didn't. He ended up coming back, but I wouldn't be surprised if we hear tonight or tomorrow that he may have had some sort of a concussion or something like that. But that could get the Colts in some trouble if that comes out, because he obviously played quite a bit after that. Three of the new guys on the team, Darnell Sankey, Corey White, and Chris Culver, all got some playing time tonight. In the first probably 10 snaps of all of them, they all looked really bad. Like, just real, you know, they're brand new. I mean, it wasn't like, I'm not being critical of them. It was just obvious that none of these guys had been in a practice until the other day, you know. But in the end, as it started going through a little bit, we started seeing some of these guys start playing. Culver had a couple nice defend passes. We ended up seeing Sankey get a little more comfortable, making a lot of really good quality fundamental tackles and getting a lot of them, to be quite honest with you. And then, you know, we saw White a couple times, but I just don't think they're very impressed with him. I think we'll probably see him gone before the next preseason game, to be quite honest with you. But that is Thursday, so maybe not. But he just didn't seem to impress anybody. But I think Culver, for the most part, kind of showed us what he's been throughout his career, has the ability to knock down a couple balls and look really good in coverage and really sticky, but also the ability to make some really boneheaded plays. But all in all, he's a fairly good cover guy. I mean, he's not great after the cover, but he's pretty good from the snap until the ball is there. And that's, half the battle, I guess. So it was nice. I was actually really, after watching Sankey's like first five snaps and how he was just all over the place, after that, I was really impressed with him, actually. And I was like, right now, I almost feel like he's better than Anthony Walker the way he's playing. Because he takes better angles. If you watch Anthony Walker, especially on a couple of those where one of the linemen are trying to set the edge on him, he allows him to set the edge on him. He never challenges the edge. And Sankey, I felt like he took more intelligent angles to the ball carrier. He wanted to be the one to set the edge and push the ball carrier back inside, whereas Anthony Walker allows him to get to the boundary. And that's just not what you do in football and defense.
Yeah. Well, and I had the same thing. I had his name down here as the game went on. You just kept hearing Sankey's name, finding himself closer to the action and getting himself in good position. And I actually had Anthony Walker's name down as well for the exact thing that you said. And I watched him get completely shut out of a play, because he just let the defender do exactly what they wanted to do, close him out and get that edge. And it was off to the races. And so,
He acted like it was a doorway, and that was his only angle to the ball carrier.
I believe it was the I'm blanking on his name, the rookie running back, Pittsburgh's rookie running back, that happened to.
Watson?
But I'm thinking of Connor.
I don't even know if Watson's a rookie. Was it Connor? Okay.
I think it was Connor. I think it was pretty early on when he came out and started looking like he was, the Adrian Peterson reborn or whatever. Right. Because we had just put our twos in, threes in, and the defense sort of kind of fell off the face of the earth for at least a drive. And it's encouraging to see some of these guys that are bringing in. You try to get their bearings. I know it's got to be crazy coming into that in the middle of the preseason, and trying to find your way into that stuff, but I expect that Ballard is going to be watching a lot of other teams, that there's going to definitely be some movement. And we know that it's going to be crazy this year because, they're not going to have to make that initial cut down. It's just going to all be done at once. And so it's just going to be a wild frenzy to try to find some people. But it's encouraging to see some guys that are coming in kind of acclimate And like you said, with Sankey, really kind of, you know, looked pretty good toward the end of the game.
Yeah, I thought so too. We now, I mean, something I think that I forgot to mention at the top of the show or towards the beginning of the game that we're recapping here. We ended up seeing Jeremy Vujinovic, or Vujinovic, whatever you want to call his name. We really wish his name was easier to figure out. But he ended up starting at right tackle. Clark didn't come in until, I want to say, late into the second half or midway through the second half. And he came in at left tackle, did a good job. The Colts ended up going on that final scoring drive. A couple plays here that I wrote down was Morris's throw to Henry Creeker Cobble inside of three defenders was a fantastic catch, similar to the one as far as what the coverage looked like around Dorsett on that ball that Morris got plugged on. But this was a zip. You know, there was some mustard on this ball from Morris to Cobble, and I thought it was a really nice catch. He threw that big bomb to Bug Howard. Really nice corner route by Bug Howard and a really nice throw by Morris. Then we got to finally see Josh Ferguson get some playing time tonight. He didn't look too bad. Still didn't, you know, he still doesn't have the body type, I don't think, to run inside very well. But he did put a nice two-cut play up there in the end zone and finished off a 14-play, 86-yard drive for a touchdown to put the Colts ahead for the final, you know, the final score there. And I was pretty impressed with Ferguson and his move. You know, I was happy to see Bug Howard get a nice and that was the beauty of it. It was a perfect route. He ran it to, you know, flawlessly. And Morris put the ball on his fingertips with ease. And it was really fun to watch that. You know, towards the end of the game, we got to see Chris Milton get an interception in the end zone on a just awful, awful pass by Landry Jones. I mean, they were running a pick play out there. Who was it? Coates, I think, got past both defenders, both Milton and whoever was playing in the slot. And he threw it to the guy that had both Milton and the other defender on him. And Coates is standing in the middle of the end zone. And yeah. Milton ended up picking it off. And then a couple – you know, actually on a play after that, or before that, I mean, there was that pass interference call on Culliver. Do you remember that? It was kind of a phantom call. He, like, threw his hand back to – okay. On that play, if you go back and watch that, watch Sickles and Justin Thomas come from the right-hand side. They lit up Landry Jones, both of them. High-low, both of them hit him at the same time, took him off his feet. I was happy to see those two actually hit somebody because I have not seen them do anything to this point in the preseason. And it's not because I think they've gotten a lot of time to play, but it's just because we haven't talked about them much at all in the preseason. So I was happy to see them get that. Then Milton almost got himself another pick on a comeback route a little bit later in the game. And for the most part, that kind of wraps up my notes on it as far as that little series there towards the end of the game. But I was happy with Milton to see him do that. I think he may have made a case for himself tonight. Obviously, Thursday he's going to have more opportunities to kind of give himself an opportunity to put himself above the rest of the other corners there and maybe squeak inside of the initial Colts 53-man roster. But, I mean, there was a lot of stuff really to like about tonight, even later in the game. You know, I was happy to see, like I said, a couple of these young guys get in there. But there's a one guy that, and I commented on this too earlier in the night, that I just haven't seen anything from. And I don't mean anything good. I just mean in general, anything bad or good. I haven't seen anything from Terrell Basham all preseason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he just has been a non-factor.
Yeah. And very quiet.
I don't know. I don't know what there is to say about that. I mean, he really hasn't been impressive at all in any way that I've seen. And it's not like we don't have the opportunity for that to, you know, on defense for him to make himself stand out. It's not like we're so overflowing with talent that you could hide him somewhere. Right. And he just hasn't really seemed to flash in a way that's just, you know, brought him into the forefront at all. So that's kind of frustrating to see because you really hoped that he could make something happen and kind of make himself stand out. But I haven't seen it either.
Right. Another guy, Grover Stewart, a guy that I've been You know, and it's kind of funny. I've gone like peaks and valleys with this guy. I wasn't overly impressed with him in draft. And then we get him. I go to camp and watch him. I was really impressed with him in camp. A lot of explosion, good quick hands. And then I haven't seen anything from him in camp either, hardly at all. I mean, he's made a couple plays, but I don't see him overpowering anybody. In fact, I more often see him getting overpowered with third and fourth string offensive linemen.
The only thing that I hope with something like that, when you see a guy flash in training camp and in the preseason, if they're not doing it in a game, what I hope is that you can work with some, that there's something there that you can work with. If they're flashing a little bit somewhere, hopefully you can refine technique. Maybe they need to build strength. Maybe they need to change something up. If you get a flash out of them somewhere, I feel like at least that encourages you enough that you can say, all right, there's something to build on. This guy at least has the, you know, the physical ability, and maybe we need to mold him differently or whatever it would be. So, you know, you hope maybe somebody like him can pick things up as he goes throughout the season, and maybe I don't know. I mean, we could use him in the worst way, though. I think we're going to see continued struggles to create that pass rush. That was the theme today. I mean, it just seemed like no matter who the quarterback was, they had time, and you know, really can use any of those young guys to step up and create some sort of a consistent pass rush, because most of the time when there was one, it seemed like it was designed. It wasn't a natural, you know, kind of just pressure. There wasn't a whole lot of that I saw. And you got to be a little bit concerned, you know, that, I mean, we played well when their ones were in, but you give people like Ben Roethlisberger enough time with the ball and he's going to burn you up, especially when he's throwing to Antonio Brown. So, you have a lot of things to like, but there's definitely still some concerns, especially in Korea.
Absolutely, there was. So as we've gone through the first three preseason games, we actually got to see a little bit of some serious play from the first and second team guys. Who's somebody that has changed your mind for better or for worse since the preseason started?
So I'll be honest with you. I was not a real high on Mathias Farley, to be perfectly honest. I wasn't sure if he was going to be able to have what it took to be a thumper, to really kind of be an enforcer. And I mean, that he has completely erased that from the beginning of camp to now. You know, I don't know that he is going to be a top tier guy, but he definitely has the ability to come in and, you know, hold down the fort while we wait for whatever's going to happen with Clayton Gathers.
Right.
And it's not that I thought he was a bad player necessarily, but I just didn't feel like he was going to be an active help, you know, just kind of a non-factor. And we've got enough of those. We don't need anybody like that. And yeah, I've been impressed with the way that he's looked. And you know, to cheat a little bit and give one more, Nate Harrison really has impressed me. I just didn't expect much from him, to be honest with you. I think it was awesome for him that Quincy Wilson didn't play tonight, because that maybe gave him a little bit more time on the field. He might have gotten some of those snaps that he took stolen a little bit away if Quincy Wilson had been in. And I assume that's still, you know, nagging shoulder deal, or just playing it safe with him. But, you know, maybe that was a blessing in disguise for Harrison, because he got some more time on the field and got to impress. And I really kind of expected him to be a pretty no-brainer cut. You know, I just didn't think there was much there, and he has definitely shown that that was unfounded.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I, you know, like I said, I kind of hit both ends of it. Criticize him in one tweet, and then the very next, like, five, I'm like, wow, this dude's really coming to play tonight, you know? Start cracking on his technique, and then the dude just starts lighting people up. It's like, all right, I guess technique's kind of overrated, you know, maybe just a little bit. But, you know, seeing that Darnell Sankey actually led the team in tackles tonight does not surprise me after watching that. 9 of his 10 were solos, and I just was really impressed with him overall. Haven't had time to have an opinion on him, really, but tonight I was impressed with him, and I was impressed with how quickly he went from being confused out there, looking like John Bostic, who's been with the team since he was signed, to maybe 3 minutes of game time later, he's just eating people alive. So I thought that was pretty cool. As far as anybody who's changed my mind, I don't know. I mean, I want to say that somebody has really, but I would have to go along with you and with Nate Hairston. Hairston was a guy who, in the first week of camp, looked like he was possibly going to struggle in coverage, mirroring receivers and being able to be close enough and be in contention for the ball to make a play on it. Second week, you could see noticeable improvement with that. But you still, with a guy like that who they'd even talked about towards the beginning of the season or the beginning of the off season, they're talking about, well, he's going to be probably a practice squad guy. I think Nate Hairston might end up being the starting nickel on this team if they keep it up. And I think that he and Chris Milton, I mean, I know Milton's been playing largely outside and they've had a couple other guys working in there at the nickel spot. But I think that those two might end up being, you know, in an actual battle right now for that third corner spot. And I think that if anything happens outside of that, I think that's good because you want a guy like Milton and Hairston to be able to work in all three positions. And I think it was smart for them to use them on the outside throughout camp for the most part. But if anything happens to Rashawn Melvin, you've got Quincy Wilson to go in there or Vontae Davis, you know, one way or the other. But you've got two guys that you've worked outside and you can really kind of maneuver them around any way that you see fit. One of the guys that I was pretty up on early in camp only because of what I was seeing, but I was negative on him until camp, and that was Antonio Morrison. I don't want to hear anybody tell me that this dude's not coming to play this year. He looks like a wrecking ball out there. That dude is coming to play. Bostic is doing a lot of standing around. I saw him make a couple plays tonight, but Antonio Morrison's the real headhunter in this the front seven right now, and I'm impressed with him. I'm glad to see it because last year was a real struggle for him in a lot of different ways, and to me, he's really coming to play this year. He's going to be one of those guys that is on top of it. I think his coverage is significantly better. He's really good against the run right now. He's quick to diagnose, and I think that's all three of those things, he's vastly improved from last season.
Definitely. Well, and every time I saw him, I don't hesitate to say anything like he's a dirty player, but he has that look about him like he's saying something obnoxious to someone right after he's just crushed them. And I really love that because the Colts are like our classic MO with everybody on our defense has been like, we're going to do the Andrew Luck thing. We're going to help you up. We're going to pat you on the back and say, good game, buddy, and send you back to your side of the ball. I want to see somebody with a little bit of nastiness and set the tone for that defense as a little bit of a nastier defense. And so it was encouraging to me to see him kind of standing over some guys and doing those things that you hate if it's somebody doing it to your team, but you kind of like to see it if it's on your side of the ball. So I was encouraged by that as well. I have high hopes for him this season.
Me too. Let's talk about a couple guys that I think might be, you know, Akeem Ayers. I thought Akeem Ayers had a good game tonight. Didn't have a lot to show for as far as production, but I thought he had a really good night tonight. Barcavius Mingo, I think he's the guy who's been showing that he's a little more consistent as far as being able to do what he's supposed to be doing out there. Marcus Hunt had a good game. Mm-hmm. Josh Boyd actually had two cute quarterback hits tonight, so that was impressive for him because he hasn't had his name mentioned hardly at all. But what about – there's a couple guys here that I think that are really interesting to talk about now, and this is weird because it's a punting, you know, battle, but Rigoberto Sanchez and Jeff Locke, do you default to Jeff Locke on this?
I mean, I don't think you should default on anything here. I mean, you don't have Pat McAfee, so I think this should just be, as far as I'm concerned, make it an open competition. I'm not making a default decision one way or the other, although it's not my money that's invested in the situation, so I'm a little bit less connected than maybe management would be, but I think make it an open competition, and that's me. I don't know.
Yeah, I was impressed with Rigoberto.
Yeah.
Two punts, averaging almost 52 yards a punt. Locke had two punts, averaged 43 yards a punt. Sanchez definitely has a better leg on kickoffs. Jeff Locke may have a little more control of his punt. You know what I mean? He may be a little more back in the day, Tiger Woods, whereas Rigoberto Sanchez may be a little more John Daly, you know. But I think that I'm okay with Rigoberto Sanchez getting the length. And, you know, and one of the things on his kickoffs is he has the ability to kick it in halfway down to the back of the end zone. But he's also getting a ton of airtime on his kicks, whereas I haven't noticed that with Locks. I don't have any issues right now if I find out tomorrow that Rigoberto Sanchez is going to beat Jeff Locke for this punting position.
Yeah, not at all.
I mean, there's not much more to talk about that, but I mean, I'm just, you know, I just thought it was interesting.
Well,
what about, go ahead.
Well, interestingly enough with kicks, one of the guys I'm interested to find out what the Colts do, and I'll be interested to know what you think about him. I am perplexed by JoJo Natson.
I was just about to bring him up.
How is that dude playing football? I could pick him up. Like he's this small little dude who's just scrappy. And I think if anything else, I mean, that puts the pressure on somebody like we talked about earlier, Dorsett needing to be tough. How do you show up and complain about nagging injuries if you're playing next to a guy who's like 155 pounds soaking wet and, you know, fights like a little Tasmanian devil? I mean, he's just all energy and fight. And I'm impressed with what he's done, but I don't know. I don't know if it's sustainable.
It was kind of funny watching him and Josh Ferguson stand next to each other after one play. And Ferguson looks like a pretty good sized dude, bigger arms, about 3-4 inches taller, it seemed like. Whereas, you know, you see Natson, little skinny arms and short dude, but that dude doesn't have any quit in him at all. And how does a guy whose last name is Natson get a nickname the Flea? Why don't they call him the Nat?
Yeah, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
The only thing that I think maybe is a knock is, I mean, he missed a pass, you know, I can't remember at what point in the game it was, but there's a ball that went his way that, you know, he probably, if he is a bigger guy, makes that catch, mm-hmm. That he's just limited by his own, you know, physical inability to get the ball. And as a short-armed individual myself, I fully felt his pain. But, you know, that's one of those things where at some point, depending on where he lands, it'll be interesting to see if he's able to make the roster. Those limitations are real, and I love the fight. And I think that there's something to be said for having a guy like that. But also, I just wonder, you know, at a pretty tough position to get an in. I mean, he's done well with the return game. I just wonder if he is fighting a battle he can't win. I'm really not sure. I feel like Quan Bray has done okay in the return stuff as well. I haven't been super disappointed with him, and he's already the established guy. So I think it's going to be tough for him to win out in that battle.
Yeah, it probably will be. And you know, somebody else we didn't see tonight was Troy Maine Pope. We didn't see him tonight either. I didn't think about that. But who is – okay, so we're done basically with the first and second guys, and maybe some of the second guys will get some snaps next week. But who's somebody that you're wanting to watch when it's basically all depth guys in week four against Cincinnati?
Because
we're going to see a lot of Philip Walker running some offense, and this is going to be a hard game to watch.
Yeah, that's – well, so we'll see the defense often.
Right.
You know, I'd like to see something out of Tyvus Powell.
Yeah.
I really had high hopes for him, and he's kind of disappeared, and I'd like to see something maybe out of him. I assume, and maybe I'm wrong, that TJ Green will get a lot of time. I'd like to watch him, see how he progresses in that last game with his playing at the cornerback position. I think he's gotten better. He still doesn't track the ball well, like you said, and he can't tackle. So he can run beside his receiver, though, so I guess that's something. But he does seem to keep a good position. I think he'll probably, you know, maybe get some playing time. I don't know. I assume they won't sit him, but maybe they will if Vontae's out for a while. He may be in that spot. But so I'd say Tyvus Powell's the guy that I'd probably like to see the most. I really thought he was going to kind of bloom into something, and he's kind of been a little bit off the grid for a little while. So
yeah, he had a solid game tonight. Nothing flashy, nothing great, but anybody on offense that you're excited to see?
Well, I mean, you talked about Troymaine Pope, and I don't know what the deal was, why we didn't see him, but I didn't actually think about it until you brought it up, and then he's a guy who has looked really exciting, so I'd love to get to see him some, see him make a difference, and maybe carve out a role for himself. I don't know if that's going to be possible. I'm not sure if there's going to be room on the roster for him. I don't know that he necessarily would beat out Josh Ferguson, but it's going to be interesting to see these receivers at the bottom. Bug Howard has looked good through camp and really in the games that I've seen as well. Yep. And I'd like to see him. And I honestly feel like Fred Brown is kind of the same way. I've been impressed with what I've seen from him. I'm not sure that he has, that he's going to make it on a roster or make it, through roster cuts, but he might get himself a job somewhere else. So some of those, at the bottom of the receiver group could be interesting to watch and see how that kind of irons itself out.
Yeah, and you mentioned him, and I'm going to double down on him. Bug Howard, I really want to see him have kind of that, where, let's see, it's the end of a game in high school, and you got your, backups in. And there's this one kid who's kind of on the cusp of being a starter and a backup, and he just happens to be playing with the backups, a lot just for, the sake of numbers. And he ends up just tearing it up where he's not getting a whole lot of getting the ball fed to him a whole lot. And I think that's kind of what I expect to see out of Bug Howard on Thursday. And I think that, look, Chester Rogers, everybody's favorite guy. He was number three on the depth chart, and for good reason. It wasn't just all fanfare and hoopla. He was legitimately the third best receiver on this roster without any question, as far as I'm concerned. I think as far as anybody's concerned, really. Dorsett has gotten himself healthy. He's been in practice. He had a good game tonight. Bug Howard, in my opinion, is really fighting for that next spot. I mean, because do they keep six because they know Chester's coming back? Or does Chester have something legitimately wrong with him to where they're going to have to IR him until midway through the season? If they do, then I think that Bug Howard's the keep right there. I really do. He's got the length. He's definitely got the speed. You saw that. I mean, a 25, 30-yard catch from Morris earlier. In fact, what did Bug have? Two catches for 35, and his long was 24. So it wasn't quite 30 yards. But, he's a guy who's got the speed to get downfield, and he's got the length. I think that he's a guy you have to feed in this fourth game. You really want to see what he can do, and it doesn't matter who he's doing it against. The guy can catch the ball. He's lengthy. You want to watch his route running. Can he beat guys downfield, and so on and so forth. I really am excited to see Bug Howard this week.
Well, and I honestly thought that was not a job he could win, because going into the offseason, I thought for sure, based on how he played in 2015, that we were going to see Kamar Aiken come in and dominate that spot, and he was really going to get a stranglehold on that position and be a really significant role player, and he just hasn't. He's shown up in some of these preseason games. He didn't look bad tonight, but he's not doing anything spectacular, and no. He is not as big as Bug, and he has – there's some opportunity that Bug gives you in the red zone that you can't get with anybody else in that group. So, I mean, he's almost like, I don't know, how much does he weigh? He's almost like another tight end. Yeah. He's probably about the same size as Kobe Fleener was, or not too much different.
Yeah, real similar. I think Kobe was like, 6'5"? I think he's 6'6".
Yeah, I mean, so you look at something like that, you see how tall that guy is. I mean, you can see when they're standing lined up, especially at camp, you could notice, it's like, who is the giant there who's standing next to T.Y.? Who is this huge dude? Yeah. I mean, he's got some abilities that, they could definitely take advantage of. And I got to think, you get Andrew in that game, who really has a little bit, well, not a little, but a lot better, control over his ball placement and all that kind of stuff. You could just destroy some teams, and I really think that's a disadvantage, that this was the first time we've gotten a chance to see these receivers, because we had some good quarterback play. This was the first time we got a chance to see some of these receivers actually show what they've got. They've these poor guys, I mean, some of these guys at the bottom of the roster have totally been screwed by the fact that the quarterbacks have played awful, and they haven't had a chance to do anything to show themselves off. And so I think if you get a look at these guys, the way they played tonight, with some good quarterback play, yeah, I mean, I think you got to be impressed with what Bug's done. It'll be good to watch him. Now he's not going to have that opportunity, you know, be taking passes from Philip Walker. He's going to be maybe the only one who can catch him because they're going to be 3 feet over everybody else's head. But but yeah, got to be excited about what kinds of things might be happening there. And I think you're right. I think he might just have that be really battling for that next spot. So.
Yeah, I was actually wrong. He's 6'4", but he definitely, you know, looks to be 6'5", 6'6", in a game and up close, because he's a very long and lanky dude with really long arms, and I think maybe his arm span may, you know, yield a little bit more height to him. At least it appears so. But, Chris, any other additional takeaways you want to get off your chest, man, before we head out of here?
Well, I mean, I think we touched on it already, kind of, but I've just been really impressed with – while everything hasn't been pretty through these three games, it's undeniable that Chris Ballard's mandate to win the takeaway battle has been picked up and completely understood by all of the defensive team. You know, they're on it. They are all about getting those turnovers. They've consistently done it. I believe, what was that? What do we have? Six turnovers through three games? I can't remember exactly how many we had last week, but it was two the first week, two this week, and at least one, if not two, against Dallas. You know, given the lack of a pass rush that we're probably not going to see, you know, an amazing solution to, maybe that improves through the season and we work on, you know, some different types of dialing up some blitzes and schemes and things to get to the quarterback, but you're going to probably have that struggle all season long. You're going to struggle with, you know, the fact that you're dealing with a new defensive unit with a lot of young guys. You're going to have some mental errors and things. But if you can take those turnovers and turn those into points, you know, I think you're going to have a chance to be in any game that you're playing in. And we don't have a tough schedule. So if you go into it with that winning the takeaway battle mentality all season long, even without luck, if you're getting more turnovers than the other team, you're going to be in that game with a fighting chance. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see that they have been following through with that it's not just a thing. Now, you know, we may be in trouble if John Simon gets hurt, because it seems like he's the main guy who's disruptive and causing a lot of that stuff. But you got to be encouraged watching these games and seeing them consistently getting turnovers, because that's not something they did last year. And I think that's probably the difference in these two 8-8 seasons, you know, versus the previous seasons, is we've been much less effective getting turnovers and you know, and taking opportunity, you know, back for the offensive side of the ball. So that's encouraging to me. And it's encouraging to see it happen again against a team that we're going to be playing this season that has thumped us royally in every game. When I have gone through and looked at projections and everything and trying to guess how the season's going to shake out, I pretty much had penciled the Steelers game in as an absolute no chance. And right, after what we saw today, I think it's fair to say that, you know, while we're not going to declare them automatic winners here, we could say, unless something crazy happens, we ought to expect them to go in and give them a fight. So,
yeah. Whether they get close enough to, you know, be within a score or anything at the end is another story, and who's under center and all that good stuff. But yeah, you're right. As a unit and as a team, they should go in and fight pretty good. But Chris, thanks for jumping on with me tonight, man. It was, you know, a little more positive tonight, of course. Not as much to complain about or anything like that for us. So thanks for jumping on tonight. We are done recapping the Colts win over the Pittsburgh Steelers in preseason game number 3. Colts play the Cincinnati Bengals on Thursday. So short week until then, but thank you guys all for joining. Thanks, Chris, for coming on tonight, man. Anything else you want to plug that you have in the works or anything before we hop off of here?
I don't have anything specific, but I'll definitely have some content coming up on Stampede Blue Page this week. So check it out, and I'm sure you'll have some stuff to check out there as well.
Absolutely. We'll have a full slate, I'm sure, throughout the week getting ready. A few short days until the next game, so we got a lot to talk about. So thank you guys all for listening. thank you guys again for battling down on those ratings and reviews on iTunes. Those things shot up really quickly. Already we're seeing results on the show from it. So thank you guys all for that. We will do the giveaway here in the next week or so. Want to make sure I got all my I's dotted and T's crossed before we get into that. But we will talk to you guys all very soon. Stay tuned for tomorrow's show. We will actually, I take that back. I'll probably do a show on Tuesday and Thursday, or Tuesday and Wednesday this coming week, outside of today's, just to kind of split it up a little bit. And then we'll have the reaction show for Friday as well on our Thursday game against the Cincinnati Bengals. So thank you guys all for listening. Make sure you guys are sharing the show, and we'll talk to you all on Tuesday right here on the Colts Cast.